Welcome to Build, Lead, Thrive, Voices of Androscoggin, a bi-monthly podcast that features in-depth conversations with the people shaping Androscoggin County. Each episode dives into personal stories, showcasing the leaders and entrepreneurs behind the region's economic and community vitality. I'm your host, Shanna Cox, President and CEO of the LA Metro Chamber. I am joined today by our local talent, my longtime friend, and our producer, Mark Turcott.
We're still going with local talent.
I'm going to keep it in there until All right. can't get away with it any longer.
Okay, sounds good.
Together, we explore how incredible people, the voices of Androscoggin, build, lead, and thrive while contributing to a better quality of life for all. So today we get to do that all over again. And what I love about our guest today is that we're going to be like right at the intersection of economic and community vitality. And I don't know that I've ever heard somebody put better voice to that than you. So today I'm joined by Rachel Ferrante. She's the executive director of the Maine Museum of Innovation, Learning, and Labor, Maine Mill. She joined Maine Mill in September of 2021 with more than a decade of museum experience and ties to the Lewiston community. She oversees all aspects of the museum, including exhibitions, programming, fundraising, finance, human resources, visitor services, communications, board development. Should we tack like janitorial or painting onto the list? Is there anything you don't do there?
No, I did both of those things today.
That's exactly what it's like running. I know what that feels like. Rachel directed the institution's rebranding from Museum LA, which might be how you remember Museum LA, to Maine Mill, which it is today, along with an expanded digital presence. In addition to what she has done and what she is so known for, some of the ways I've gotten to know Rachel best over the last year and a half is through our work together, really working with and remembering October 25th. And so we might touch on that a little bit today, but through that work, you have taught me a ton about the importance of culture to the process that I've been trying to support, really just seeing a different side to the very same coin. And so I love the learning that you have shared with me. It's been so appreciated. And God knows there's plenty of learning left. So you're not done teaching me. Don't think you're off the hook. Prior to this role that Rachel's in now, she spent 11 years at the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York, rising from an assistant in the director's office to the marketing manager and finally launching and overseeing the touring exhibition program as an exhibition project manager. Rachel is a graduate of our very own Bates College with a BA in art and visual culture and a minor in rhetoric. We're going to have to come back to that.
Let's, because it's one of my favorite parts.
She holds a master's in business administration from New York University's Stern School of Business. She and her husband have two adorable, I might add, young sons who I got to meet not that long ago. So welcome to Build We Thrive.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah,
I'm excited to be here.
Rhetoric. Just briefly, like two sentences, what is a minor in rhetoric?
Communications would be the way more people know it, but it's also sort of the building blocks of communication. So one of the classes that Bates is most well known for is presidential campaign rhetoric.
Yeah.
So
it's not just communications. It's like, it feels like communications in a very specific venue and format. Is that right?
Yeah. And understanding sort of the meaning behind words mm-hmm. and why they're powerful. They're not just powerful because mm-hmm. people have put them together in a way just sort of out of the blue. There is actually some principles and building blocks behind that.
I love that. I do feel like all of those parts and pieces make you exactly the right person for exactly this moment in time for both Maine Mill and our region.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I took the job.
Well, thanks for that. So before we dig into to all the good stuff, Mark, let's open with our first segment, getting to know you.
Let's. Do you want to sing?
I hear it's a bad thing and we should stop doing
it. We have received complaints. So
no, I'm excited.
Perhaps.
Just use your big radio voice.
Perhaps.
And that's nice.
Okay. Getting to know you is where we ask guests fun, personality-revealing questions to help you learn about and connect with our guests on a personal level before we get into the deeper questions. This is like the appetizers before the main course.
So little nibbles, Rachel. Little nibbles.
I prefer appetizers over main
yeah.
courses.
It's so like a tapas style. Yeah. What is a surprising skill or talent that you have outside of work? And we covered in your bio all of the things that are work-related, so you can't pick anything related to that.
That's right. In the summertime, I'm a pretty avid water skier.
Ah.
And I slalom water ski for fun.
Slalom water ski.
So that means on one ski, not two.
How come we don't call that
fun?
Ski boarding? Is that snowboarding is one.
Well, it's not on snow. It's on water.
I know.
Water. But she said
skiing. We can't call it waterboarding. There's very good reasons that won't work.
Correct.
Okay.
Good call.
Thank you.
That's wakeboarding.
Yes, thank you.
There's
thank
wakeboarding you. And water skiing.
And not quite the same.
No.
Different actual
It is
skiing.
Very akin to skiing and snowboarding. So water skiing, but only on one ski. So it's like if you were skiing only on one ski.
Relatedly.
Yeah.
You... crew. You row.
Yeah, exactly. I was the coxswain, would yes. be the term. I was the coxswain for the women's boat at Bates.
Yeah.
That went to nationals. That See, was a little fun part of my life. Yeah. Little, water sports.
Little side note.
Bates is like, they own rowing, don't they?
They do now. The women's team is amazing. I would never make it now if I was in college.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So it was Bates circa a certain period in which you
That's
excelled.
Right. That's right.
Yeah.
Timing does matter, guys. Timing does matter. Yeah, no, they kill it.
Yeah, Bates is do. Incredible.
I got my kids into rowing, and they loved it. And I just think it's such a it's a fun little aside that you can do right here on the Androscoggin River, which
you can.
A lot of people don't know about. What is one local business or community initiative that excites you right now? There's a ton of cool things going on. I'm going to make you pick one.
I'm really excited about all of the nonprofits that are sort of upgrading or enhancing what they're doing.
Yeah.
So when Safe Voices opened their new space a couple of years ago, I thought that was amazing. And so seeing that Trinity Jubilee's campaign has really gotten off the ground in their building project, like these are things that were being talked about when I started this job here that I thought were really going to help the community. And so seeing something like Trinity Jubilee actually get off the ground and get the space they need and so deserve is really exciting for me.
Because you are nice and a woman with considerable etiquette, I would note on your behalf, because you shouldn't or can't in this moment, that I was recently asked a similar question outside of this region, and the main mill was my answer.
Oh, that's incredibly
kind. You can't say that about yourself. We'll talk about that a little bit, but I'm sure that would be on your list if it wasn't yours.
It would be on my list, but I'm excited about a bunch of nonprofits.
There's lots of great things happening.
Yeah.
What is a book, podcast, show, or movie that has inspired you recently?
Oh, I just finished The Berry Pickers.
Mm.
Fantastic novel. And I am not a novel reader. In fact, I shy away from novels. It's about Native Americans who come from Nova Scotia and pick berries in Maine. And a little girl gets lost. And it is about the story of her and her family and her, what happens to her. I won't say more. It's
thanks like, for not spoiling it.
Yeah.
But it left you feeling inspired.
It did, about the power of family and communities and stories. And it just had me thinking.
I love walking away from something that like is stuck in my head. That's a good use of my time. If I can't stop thinking about it, or if it shifts the way I think, that's my favorite.
Yeah.
What is your go-to productivity hack when you're feeling overwhelmed? So
I gotcha.
You juggle a lot of balls, similar to me. We've had this conversation many times. I know that you always have a lot on your plate. Never seen you really look overwhelmed, so I'm excited to hear
right when I walked in the door that
is.
Wasn't that
no you managed to like nope. I don't know if you've got a good gloss or you just somehow never actually feel overwhelmed. That would be miraculous. But what's the productivity hack that keeps you feeling good about it all?
Two things. One, shower time, super important. Really helps me organize my day and sort of plan out what I'm going to do.
So you shower in the morning.
I'm a morning shower. Yeah. It's a curly hair thing.
Yeah, I can appreciate that.
And also, on days where I'm feeling overwhelmed, there are always a couple of emails in my inbox that are very quick to respond to. So I usually do those first as a way to like jump in before I do the big hard things. I'm like, if I
give yourself a couple wins to pick up momentum.
Yeah, a couple wins of like three quick emails, like, oh, I'm feeling productive because my unread inbox went down. That's my go-to move.
I love that.
I often leave some of those quick things in the afternoon. I could respond to them tonight, or I could leave them for tomorrow morning, and then they will be my first things, and then I will feel productive first thing in the morning.
I don't know if you do it, but sometimes I'm not a talk to myself in the third person kind of gal, but I will literally say to myself, no, I'm not going to do that, because that is tomorrow Shanna's gift. Today Shanna is going to give that to tomorrow Shanna so that she has a win in the morning. And sometimes I'm like, I'm going to set her up for success tomorrow.
That's
is
what
that
I do.
Strange?
No, I do that subconsciously. I just don't do the talking part.
Well, I don't always say it out loud, but that's what it sounds like inside. Sometimes I do say it out loud. Sometimes if it's a big enough gift, I'll be like, you're welcome tomorrow.
Yeah.
It's not abnormal. So you get it. Yeah. No, I think that's really wise. So every once in a while, we talk to folks on this show who are zero inbox people.
I desperately try to be a zero inbox person. So my unread emails, if they are above 20, that is a really bad day for me. That's a crazy
day. But you recognize that sometimes zero is maybe not achievable, and you don't beat yourself up about it.
Right. Yeah. I have a maximum of 100 in my inbox.
Yeah.
2 pages, that's all I can do.
I just added the on fire label to my inbox to help me manage it, and I don't know what that says, but I have to say it's been very effective. January is a tough month around here.
I would like to be an inbox zero person.
Oh, I don't.
I strive to be one of those people. I so am admiring of those people.
I like that you're giving yourself gifts of emails for tomorrow. I'm gonna embrace that more. And I'll follow up with you about how that was great for me, too, because I have no doubt that
you could think about that the next time you get an email from me at, like, 9 a.m. Right. And I'll be like, oh, good to know that was easy for her.
See? Thanks. Little short bites, little appetizer. Let's get into the real meats and
the
potatoes.
Meat? Great.
Yeah, yeah. Great. Someday I'm going to have a vegan or a vegetarian on the show, and I'm going to have to catch it before then, but... Yes.
That's not me.
Today is not that day. Thanks. Thanks for keeping us rolling. I want to talk about the rebranding and community impact because I mean, how long were you there when you tackled rebranding Museum LA to Main Mill?
It started pretty immediately. It was one of the things the board had tasked me to do. It was part of the interview was we are rebranding the institution. So we were pretty well. I started in September of 2021. We were pretty well underway with Warp and Weft, I want to say, in early 2022.
Yeah. Yeah. And having been part of those efforts, the chamber rebranded before my time. But I, both as a member and then also in my own work, having created a brand and rebranded before, it's not a small undertaking. So the rebranding from Museum LA to Main Mill was a significant shift. Tell me a little more about what inspired the change and how you think it's influenced the museum's connection, not just to the local community, but also its role in the regional economy.
Yeah, so there were a couple of things about Museum LA that weren't working for the state that the museum is currently in and the trajectory where it's headed. First of all, there are very few people that refer to this region as LA outside of this area, and even fewer of them outside of the state. Mm-hmm. And so if we are an institution that is trying to look more broadly, it's a problematic name if we are broader than Lewis and Auburn. More importantly, I think from a mission perspective, we are telling a Lewiston Auburn-based story, but one that is replicable all over the state.
Yeah.
And so it was important that the name reflect that, that the story was really a Maine story and is a Maine story, not just a Lewiston Auburn story, though we will always be based in the Lewiston Auburn area.
Yeah.
And so that is sort of were the driving forces behind needing the change. And then as you can see in that answer itself, it also sort of led to the name. So, you know, innovation, learning, and labor were words that kept coming up as we did focus groups with people throughout the community. I know you were
I was part of one of them. Yeah.
And so the words that were part of the new name really came out of what the museum's always been about. And then the acronym was very handy because Maine Museum of Innovation, Learning, and Labor is a mouthful.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and we're a mill town, but I can say, you know, having done economic development work across the state, there are so many other communities that demographically, architecturally, historically, the stories of the people have so many similarities. And, you know, I think within our state, it's often that we're in some ways rivals to some of those areas in competition, whether it's for businesses or production or visitors. But we are a small state. And, you know, the every time I get out of Maine or even New England, the way that people think of Maine as like a small little place. And it's a place where I'm going to Maine and they might go to 5 or 6 spots. It's not like when people say I'm going to Boston and they didn't go anywhere else in Massachusetts. Really inverse of that. And so I love that. And I think that makes sense. So much sense.
And I think the broadening of the museum was very intentional. I mean, we are the only place, the only museum that has this kind of mill historical collection. There is nowhere else in the state that's got some of the objects and the artifacts that we have. And so it's important that we really represent that and showcase that for the entire state.
Well, and then you have the eye that gives you so much room for the rest of your trajectory, right? So to be able to talk about innovation and...
I think all of those words, innovation, learning, and labor, were meant to also, which is very much something I've been focused on, be historical in nature and very forward-looking.
Yeah.
And so it would be encompassing in that way.
Smart.
Thanks.
Nice work with that rebrand.
Thanks. Well,
thanks for giving credit to Warp and Weft. They do incredible work. And
yeah, huge shout out to Warp and Weft, who were incredible partners in it. And frankly, all of the feedback from the community was really helpful because I was just really getting to know everybody here. And so we relied heavily on both of those things for sure. But it was fun because I had been through a rebranding at the Met and seen how that worked for the good and the bad. And so
it's a big lift.
So it was fun to sort of be in charge of it. Yeah.
I'm glad that you were. What a cool way to learn this community that became your new like professional home. That's a great way to get a sense of what people think about, what was the museum, to know all of the people who have input and thoughts and desires and want something from you in that trajectory in terms of what it means in relationship to them or their mission or their work.
Listening sessions are when you're not in the room and then you can read people's thoughts. People are real honest and that's helpful.
Yeah. I mean, you want it.
Yeah.
It's like the medicine that tastes yucky going down, but you need it.
That's right.
I had my fair share of listening sessions. So museums often serve as cultural hubs and economic drivers. I have, you know, this is obviously in an audio format, but man, there are some gorgeous renderings of what Maid Mill's gonna be. And I can't wait. I mean, obviously we have to, but I genuinely can't wait to see what that drives for our region. I think it is going to be a significant milestone for us kind of as a whole. And so how do you see, and maybe it is, I mean, probably because you're a brilliant woman, probably is beyond just the building and what the building houses, but what do you see Maid Mill contributing to Androscoggin County's broader economic development while also preserving the unique cultural identity? And I know you pay attention to both, and I know what I think and what I want to see, but you're living it and breathing it. Tell us more about
that. Well, I would love to hear what you think. One of the major reasons I took this job was that I do fundamentally believe that one of the key things Lewiston is missing is a real cultural destination point. And I also firmly believe that this new building is that. So yes, it's a beautiful new building and it'll be wonderful, but also it provides the sort of basis and a cultural hub whereby more culture hopefully continues to sort of spin off from that or out from that in a way that I think will be incredibly powerful. You know, there's all sorts of data from, you know, the main office of tourism, et cetera, about how many of the 12 million visitors a year that we get here do cultural activities. And frankly, I just don't think there are enough sort of major reasons for those, some tiny fraction of those 12 million people to stop and have one of the places where they're going to do those cultural activities be here.
Yeah.
And I say that running a current one of those cultural institutions. And so, you know, that is sort of the big picture. And then sort of from the programming side of it, a lot of what we've been focused on is, yes, it's a history and culture museum based in a mill currently, will be based in another mill in the future. But the story of Lewiston Auburn is bigger and broader than that. And so telling the history of the region and of the state over the last 30 years is its own important part of the effort. And so finding ways, I think, to tie that fuller history all together is also going to be incredibly powerful for locals who may not have a direct connection to the mill story or who are interested in other parts or interested in ways of connecting to a place that isn't necessarily your stereotypical museum.
Yeah.
Like, that is what I am hoping for. One of the reasons we're Maid Mill and that this museum part is a little bit hidden is because I hope it will provide an entry point for people who might not otherwise feel comfortable at your typical museum.
Yeah. Well, yes. Yes to all of that. And thank you for that, for that being the direction, for that being the thinking and the strategy. I come from a really blue collar family, both sides of my parents, for generations on both sides, and I didn't grow up going to museums. Like, I didn't grow up with culture. I didn't go to plays. I didn't see art exhibits. And those are all part of my day-to-day life living in Lewiston, Auburn now, that I love, and that was a really important piece of raising my children, right? So performing arts, visual arts, music, I just am grateful that that's part of what my life is like and what I get to share with my kids. And I'm really fortunate because I've been poor as poor can be at various points in my life, and like finding an economical way to expose your kids to arts and culture can be really hard, and sometimes reserved for folks who are privileged. And we have enough free or low cost opportunities here that I was able to find my way in and raise my kids to have an appreciation of that, which, you know, to have two 18-year-olds be like, I'd love to go see the symphony on Friday, and can I be an usher and volunteer, is like, that would have been unheard of where I grew up. And so, you know.
And I just want to say, you know, I grew up in New York City, and I also wasn't a museum kid, even with some amount of privilege. And so, you know, I also think of Main Mill as really just culture does have the power to sort of help take care of people. And what I've sort of figured out about me and about this institution is that's really what we're about. We're gonna take care of people in a way that they might not know that they need, but mm-hmm. it does actually help. And as you're saying, it's really important to provide free and low cost ways to do that. And so we do.
Yeah. You just offer such broad things. And I think for a community that has so much of our regional history is wrapped up in a blue collar narrative.
Sure.
Right. From making the mills to working in the mills to textile and shoe. And it's just the history of our region and the people of our region. And I love that there's a museum that embraces that.
And that labor story. And that labor story continues, right? So that labor story of people working in the mills is also continuing today with all sorts of other innovative businesses that aren't in the mills. And that's important to capture too. And so that broader sort of mission and name allows us, I think, to focus on those people and spotlight those businesses in really important ways.
Yeah. No, I think that's so manufacturing is one of our growing sectors of our economy today. Some of that is still happening in the mills, sometimes in very hands-on ways, sometimes in current technological-based manufacturing, but it's all over Lewiston and Auburn. And I love that that's part of our story. I love that people here can get good-paying jobs in all kinds of manufacturing that just, you know, takes care of their family. And I love that, that there's still a space for that in our community. And I love the way that you've captured both that history and the potential to keep telling that story as whatever labor here looks like changes over time. One of the things that you just said, that part of what you've learned is that it's about taking care of people, sometimes in ways they don't know they need. So that's been the story of our work together.
Absolutely.
And part of your sometimes painful learning lessons that you've taught me. Painful because I'm a hard student and not because you're not a good educator. But, you know, since October 25th, 2023, you just, you know, there was a handful of us who saw spots that other people weren't seeing yet, and perhaps for really good reasons. They had really important things they were also focused on. And your just ability to know what was coming next and what was going to be needed as it was related to the cultural considerations of that moment and the healing in weeks to come, and turns out months/years to come, something I don't think any of us could think about, had space to think about, wanted to think about in those. But like, as you and I have learned, it's a 7 to 10 year journey for communities that have experienced a shooting like Lewiston did. And so I couldn't even begin to describe the ways and the activities and the thoughtfulness that you've and some of your folks have put into making sure that when we're ready, when people are ready to remember or to see those days through a different lens, that we're able to. And I got to see your exhibit right before it came down during the holidays, and it impacted me and moved me in all the ways that I knew it would, and all the ways and so many more. So talk a little bit about your efforts. I mean, certainly as you envisioned Main Mill and as you thought about the physical building and the rebrand and all of the work that you've done, it was probably not on your bingo card that this was going to be something you would need to tend to, and yet you've done an incredible job doing it. And
thank you.
Yeah, talk a little bit more about what that looks like for a cultural institution.
Yeah, so nobody thinks, I mean, you didn't
nobody
think
wants
you,
to.
Nobody wants to, nobody, and it is the classic, nobody thinks it's going to happen
right
to them, and no museum person thinks the museum where they work is all of a sudden going to get turned on its head.
Right.
But
it did.
And it became almost immediately clear that sort of everybody else in town was focused on the people, because there was a lot of need in this community. And absolutely people first. So there are some things we've learned sort of out the other side from my peers around the country, horrifyingly, who, you know, are 3, 7, 10, 15 years ahead of us.
Yeah.
One of them is people first, people over objects. And so that's been a guiding principle. And so people were focused on people, but it's not people and no objects. It's just people first. And so what became clear was nobody was focused on the objects.
Yeah.
And at first there weren't that many objects, but it grew pretty quickly.
Yeah, it did.
And there was no capacity anywhere else, frankly, for anybody to take care of the objects. And
I'm going to break this down for our listeners, because you taught me what the word object means and how and when to use it. But it took some introduction for me. And so for those of us who might use terms like memorabilia or
signs. Yeah. So all the Lewiston Strong signs, all of the hearts that
teddy
were on the Lisbon Street, all the candles, all the...
I mean, until someone sees your collection, object can really desensitize a word that means so many items, but also of varying scales, of varying... This is one of the things you taught me as we prepared for the commemoration event, but like some of them were organic and aren't going to preserve forever and some aren't. And there's so many considerations. And so when Rachel's talking about objects,
she means
everything that you would have seen at the sites or in so many different places. It's all of that.
Or by the way, that you still have that you're not sure what to do with.
Yeah.
That meant a lot to you for a year. Like we are still taking things. So that's also important. There's no end to this. So anything October 25th, related, basically, period.
Yeah.
We have collected.
There's a place for that.
There's a place for that. It's at Main Mill.
The collection's incredible. I've had the ability to see it, and it's amazing. And you had the foresight to not only photograph many of those things, collect those things, preserve those things, care for those things, when most people would have either described it as trash because it was on their property and maybe it wasn't a spot that they were expecting things to be left behind, or a really, really important, meaningful object that somebody left there with intention, and everything in between. And regardless of where it fell on that spectrum, you've treated everything with care.
We don't know yet, right? I mean, unfortunately, the shooting was one of the most important things to happen in Lewiston's history. It just is. And for those of us that are sort of trying to move on and forget, it's not possible. Yeah. We can move forward together, but this is a part of Lewiston's story. And so as a history and culture museum, it did feel like our responsibility to preserve that history as best we could. And that was a pretty careful dance we were doing about leaving objects that were left at, you know, essentially grave sites as long as they possibly could withstand it before they were going to fully degrade, be ruined by snow, by you name it, rain, etc. And so we've brought all of those things now back to the museum. It's probably 1,500 things, objects.
Yeah.
And we've created a room. The other thing that became clear is, like, in some ways for a museum, that was the easy part. Museums know how to collect things. We know how to archive things.
Yeah.
Now it's also our job to reflect that back to the community.
Yeah.
So to help people reflect themselves and have a moment of quiet or have a moment of healing or whatever, or have a moment with a friend or a family member in the space to cry or whatever people need, and to tell different stories that are going to be impactful as people sort of move through various feelings.
Yeah.
So we have this room, we've curated, you know, we had for the first year, we had sort of a pretty good example of the types of things that we're likely never going to be able to show every single thing.
Yeah.
We just won't have the space for it. But we have committed to having a room where something will always be on display and rotating that yearly for commemoration.
That's appreciated.
Yeah. So we've got, right now we've got 261 flower sleeves, which was done by two local artists, Tanya Hollander and Mia Zellner. And it's all of the plastic wrappers that, you know, flowers that you buy at a grocery store often come in those plastic things. So we couldn't keep all of the flowers. Those were dying.
Yeah.
But we did keep all of the plastic flower sleeves. And Tanya and Mia created this installation that you can walk through and move. And it's got great shadows and light. And
it really
it's quite
does.
Serene.
It was really powerful to walk through that space. And you're right. It really did have beautiful light and shadows. You do such a good job. Tanya did a great job capturing so many things with photography, including one of my own, which every once in a while, I could always tell when somebody had gone, somebody who knew me had gone to the exhibit, because I would get this text message that would say, I saw your Tupperware of Tums.
So Shanna had on her desk.
Rachel and I are just meeting, just connecting in a normal busy day.
Yes, I came in for something and Shanna had on her desk what she had now lovingly calls her emergency Tupperware that was filled with Tums, Advil, and chocolate.
Yeah.
And mixed then, all and, just
and some
just
vitamin
for,
gummies just in case my nutritional
just
clearly
for
was
listeners, you know, understanding. All mixed together
yeah,
in one
just
little
all
Tupperware.
Loose in this little glass. Yeah.
You thought nothing of that Tupperware.
No, and it was kind of embarrassing. Still is.
But I saw somebody managing way above their capacity through October 25th and that it was actually perfectly emblematic of what so many people were feeling.
Yeah.
And here's the head of the local chamber, and this is how she's getting through her days,
just
you know?
By.
And I think it resonates with a lot of people, as a lot of those objects that are very personal do for people, and it's like a point of connection.
Yeah.
I also think one of the reasons that the Tupperware is great is because we have the story behind it.
Yeah.
And so that's been another part of our work, is taking these oral histories, because that's, again, people and objects, people ascribe meaning to objects.
Yeah.
And so objects become much more powerful when you know the person or you know the story behind the thing rather than it just being a thing. If it's just a jar of Tupperware with...
Yeah, I mean, without any story, it's
not...
It's still kind of gross to look at even if you do know the story.
It doesn't really pack a punch in the same way.
Yeah. I remember you being like, that's powerful. And I was like, that's embarrassing, but it was a complete survival technique, and I wasn't alone. Like, I know you were
absolutely
running the same hours and feeling the weight of what you were trying to do and the people who you were trying to serve in that time, even though that's very different. I know we were carrying the same weight, and yeah, that was just my, like, I'm working 18-hour days and sometimes my food choices are limited and fast, and this is how I'm going to get through my day. It's I eat better now. But it was very real, and it was real for months.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a long period of time where that was real. Anyway, you all are doing a great job.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. No, I appreciate it. I often talk to folks who ask about how it is to be here in this community, what it means to deal with the aftermath of the shooting, and, you know, how are you doing? And I think people want a different answer than so many of us can, like, oh, great, is what they want to hear. And the reality is I don't think moving past it or getting over it is a realistic. It's not a goal I even ascribe to, right? But I think moving through it, and so much of the work that you've done has helped people move through. Like, the best we can do is just get up and move forward another day and move through our grief just a little bit more. And I think that's a really important piece of what you've done, not just at the museum itself, but also, you know, through the October 25th commemoration event that you did with us. But I think the thing that I'm most grateful for in your work in this area is how well you've communicated it. So many of us could know it's really, folks at home, she just did this, like, oh no, little shy face, but I'm gonna articulate the face you just made because it's important, but the reality is like, I saw a lot of communications coming out about really important things, hard, complex things to describe, and you were always transparent, you were always clear, you always made it very clear what you were doing, because honestly, if somebody left an important stuffy there on that site and came back a week later and it was gone and there was no understanding of why, and I would find it really unlikely that anyone found themselves, because you were so good at clear communication, at regular communication, at transparent communication, at accessible communication. You didn't make it harder than it needed to be for people to understand what you were doing or why or where they could go. And so I just really respect that, and I'm grateful for that.
Thank you.
Yeah, there's a lot of unintended consequences when that's done poorly.
Yeah.
And you make sure that didn't happen.
I think it brought awareness to the work that we're doing broadly. And so, but the flip side of that is there aren't a lot of people that knew us in the community before October 25th. And that was hard at the beginning. And so we did tend to try to over communicate because we didn't want people to be upset. Yeah. We were trying to add good, right? There was, as I said, there was a lot of need in the community. We were trying to fill one of many needs.
Yeah. Well, and you and I have both reflected on this, but there is absolutely zero that either of us can do in any of our efforts that is 100% satisfying to everybody.
Right.
Like essentially just by saying, yes, we're going to contribute in whatever way we can, we're inevitably going to make, I don't know, 2% of people mad, 5% of people frustrated. It's just part of what we have to accept when we wake up and say, we think overall, this is worth frustrating or disappointing a couple of people because so many more are positively impacted by it. But man, that
also
weighs.
To bring it full circle, the museum's rebranding, when we rebranded, our tagline became, so this was 2.5 years ago, three years ago now. Today is tomorrow's history has been on the front of our website for 2.5 years. If we really mean that, as that's the words we live by, then the work we did was literally just mission driven over the last year.
I think that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, keep that up. Love it. This feels like a loaded question, and we don't do gotcha questions here, so it's not like that. But it's a softball. Think of it that way.
Thanks for the preface.
You're welcome. Because I think this is something that I've seen really grow and change under your leadership, and which I'm excited about. So with innovation and learning at the heart of Maine Mill, how are you engaging younger generations to ensure that the region's history and culture remain relevant and inspiring for the future? I love some of the things I've seen you do in this space. And so brag a little. Tell us a little bit about, because I think you guys are doing great stuff.
Thank you. So we have a full-time educator on staff. So, you know, and field trips have always been a huge part of what the museum does. We are trying to focus those a little bit more on how a tour of an old mill relates to your potential future young person.
I would offer you this. There is a difference between education of younger generations and engagement.
Yeah, for sure.
And so it is on that spectrum that I've seen you leaning into engaging in new ways.
So we have, for example, created these innovation kits where kids are learning to build solar power cars, for example, that they can then race in our parking lot because we are teaching first about hydropower and about how hydropower once powered the mills and now to learn about other renewable energies and learning about solar power to solar powered cars and understanding that like there are jobs in renewable energy.
And as a mom, I know those kids went home and said, I built a car and sailed it in the parking lot outside.
Right.
Awesome. Good smart work.
And then to our earlier comment, you know, about sort of making the museum more accessible to lots of demographics, right? One of my big things is I don't want people to think of it as sort of an inaccessible museum. I just want people to come and see what's there because I think people will be excited about it. And so that's how Movement at the Museum was born.
Love this.
Which is monthly free programming on the final Friday of every month. We offer a different movement session. So African drumming. Yoga with cello, I think, is coming up.
I wanted to go to the tango one and couldn't make that. Right. That was cool.
Greek folk dancing. Like, you name it. Also, if anybody's listening and they are an instructor of anything that can remotely be considered
movement,
we take that term very broadly. In December, we did caroling. Movement of the vocal cords, ?
I love it.
We would love to have you. We pay our instructors, and then we offer it for free to the public with the idea that hopefully people will come in a new, if that feels more accessible to people than a museum, that's how they'll get in the door.
I haven't had a chance to be able to make it to one of them. Final Fridays coincide for me with some standing stuff, but man, that's
African
fun.
Drumming, very popular.
Yes, love that.
I have even done that one. I'm not very good, but they make it very easy.
So a fun side fact that I think we might have talked about once previously, Mark, catch me if I'm wrong, but I've poorly played a number of instruments in my life. None of them have really stuck and none of them have been well, but the one I liked the most was steel drums, in part because when you play it, you are physically moving. Like, your whole body has to be in the rhythm to hit the notes when your notes are 5 feet across from you in these big drums. And so, yeah, if you
hula hooping, Shannon.
Yeah.
We've done that.
See, I love. Yeah. Love. That's engaging, right? And I think that's such a great way to get people in to explore the museum. And the minute you walk in, you know that it doesn't feel stuffy. There's no, should I touch this? Should I not? It's very clear, very comfortable, very inviting, very engaging space. And so I think doing movement inside is a fun way. Also, I'll do some outreach for you.
Great.
Get you some movement artists that might be able to come in.
Great.
Yeah. I don't know if people know. If you aren't a student or a parent of a student, you might not know how many students you serve.
Right. We see a couple thousand students a year, probably close to two or 3,000 a year.
Not a small piece of what you do.
Yeah.
Coming in by the busload, literally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And summer camps, too. So since I started, we, rather than start our own summer camp program, basically what we've done is gone to existing summer camps who might not have the funds to pay for admission for their campers. We've gotten it underwritten by a very generous donor. So awesome. That's totally free. So, you know, we work with Tree Street and Lewiston Rec and Lisbon Rec and lots of other camps. Again, people are running camps and they want their kids to come. We love that. Yeah, we see a couple hundred campers every summer.
Because the new museum is being built not on site.
Right.
Where you are currently. Does that mean
Thank goodness for that.
Yeah. Well, so then there's no interruption, theoretically, of the limited. I'm sure there will be.
Let's go with limited.
Okay, let's go with limited. I did see all those objects. That's going to take a minute to move.
Yeah, so it wasn't a meeting about that. You know, they can't just like lickety-split move them one day.
No.
Yeah, so that's going to take a minute. But, you know, so we've started construction at the new place. We will hopefully be open there in spring or summer of 2026. I would anticipate we're going to need to be closed for a couple of months before we open in the new place just to move everything.
Yeah.
During that time period in terms of like adult programming, probably there won't be a ton, but school groups, we will likely send Mary Kate into schools, which she has done some of. So
that's cool.
We also sort of have programming on the road where educator comes to school instead of schools coming to us. And then when we open there, we'll have a full classroom, which we don't have now, which will be amazing. And we have a design lab, so there'll be lots more hands-on things for adults or learners of all abilities.
Yeah.
There's a children's area for play. Where we'll do sorts of, you know, morning activities, I would imagine. And the permanent exhibition space itself, which has really been reimagined through a really great process, has a lot of interactives in it, too. So one of them, to your question about innovation.
Yeah.
We are working on, you'll learn all about innovations of the past, working your way towards innovations of the future, where you then program a robot to draw your own design.
Love. Mark looks skeptical / excited.
No, that's pretty sweet.
Very
excited.
What would I draw?
We'll give you some ideas.
What would my robot draw for me?
For those of you less creative, we'll give you some ideas. Yeah.
It's funny that you mentioned that. My chiropractor has a left brain, right brain wall art in the room that I sit in. And it's four canvases and the two left brain are in black and white with numbers, and then the two right brain ones are almost devoid of words and are beautifully colorful, and I'm very much a left brain thinker, and I always get sad mostly that I am somebody who would need support drawing creatively with the help of a robot, because I would inevitably need that support.
You know what? I need that too. My son has a thing where we're supposed, in his journal, we're supposed to write back for school. He's in kindergarten, so he writes something. Then we write back, and we're also supposed to draw a picture and write back. I've decided to divide and conquer. I do the writing, and my husband does the drawing. I'm incapable of drawing.
Is he a left brain guy? He's an attorney, right?
He's a lawyer with a left brain? I'm not sure. Yeah. Anyways, he does the drawing, and I do the writing. I've taught my children the word abstract because that's the answer when somebody asks you what it is.
Yeah.
If it's not a thing, you just say abstract.
Yeah.
It's abstract. That's your foray into the museum world.
Do we get to say that about written product, too? Or is that only on hand? Just checking for a friend. Just checking. I'll convey it to them later, whatever your answer might be. No, it's fine. I love that you're going to have hands-on innovation spaces. And we can't show you, obviously, but one of the things I love the most is the way you're weaving, well, the most that I can, from concept drawings and not having been in it. So I'm sure there's going to be many amazing things. But I love the the metal external framework that's backlit.
Yes, should we give some description?
Yeah, would you? I mean, I could do it, but it's not going to be as good as yours.
So the new building is an existing building. So the Camden Yarns Mill is existing at about 14,000 square feet over two floors. And then the addition adds about another 8,000 square feet. And in that addition, the outside of it is Corten steel, which is with rivets in it, which is backlit such that the rivets or the poles basically become the design of one of the Bates bedspreads.
So cool.
And there will be more information on our website. So we will have a groundbreaking ceremony in April. And ahead of that, there'll be lots of renderings on our website people can check out.
Yeah, it's going to be super cool. For folks who can't put a pin in where that mill exactly is, if you are in Samard Payne Park and you are either going to or coming from Auburn and you're near the pedestrian bridge, if you look to the side of where there's a building and not the park side, because it depends on which direction you're coming in, there's a brick mill building that has some existing artwork on it.
It's almost gone.
Yeah, it was always meant to deteriorate over time, in case people have questions about that. I know that was a topic.
It was.
Yeah. But it's that building.
Correct.
And it's going to be incredible.
And it's under construction right now, so it's the building that's in Samard Payne Park that's under construction as of early 2025.
It's a good, simple identifier. We're already in early 2025. Yeah. How quickly did you start?
We started the second week of December.
Wow. Keep chugging forward, girl. I appreciate that. All right, last big question.
Okay, great.
Last meat and potatoes.
Is there dessert? I'm trying to be good and not eat dessert, but I love dessert.
Yes, I would say our last segment would be your dessert course.
Okay, great.
Yep. As somebody who enjoys eating, we'll get you all the courses, don't you worry.
Excellent.
As someone with extensive experience in leading cultural institutions and cultural work, and you and I have had this, so dig into this conversation. What do you believe is the most critical role that museums play in shaping not just community identity, but its economy and its economic vitality? We've had this conversation about the intersection of not just the cultural work that you're doing, but the very real, very evidence-based potential for economic impact.
Right, and this is sort of what I was going back to about sort of those becoming a cultural destination and a tourism spot, right? And so, you know, if you sort of think about how people that are culturally inclined typically try to organize a trip or spend their money, right? If they come here and there are amazing places to eat and drink, and then we need to offer them also some things to do. And so sort of becoming that cultural destination is really not just about people visiting Main Mill. It's about people also going to a show at the Public Theater and then going out to dinner and then going out for a drink and staying in one of the hotels here, waking up and doing a couple more things and then, you know, leaving. There is a whole sort of community ecosystem built into the idea that cultural institutions are huge economic drivers. And there's a lot of research to suggest that that's what happens. You know, there's some really great examples. I think one of the ones that's probably most akin to this place for me is looking at North Adams, Massachusetts and Mass MoCA. North Adams, Massachusetts was not a place people visited before Mass MoCA existed. And now there's Mass MoCA and a really nice hotel. And there's a bunch of things that have grown up around Mass MoCA. But that is really fundamentally why people go there for a weekend. And what that contributes to the local economy is then they are also eating dinner there and staying overnight there and making it into a whole weekend trip and all sorts of dollars that we know come out of that. And so the importance of culture in that conversation is how I've been thinking a lot about what Main Mill's role is within the community.
No, I think that's right. We here at the Chamber are doing some work at marketing this region, and specifically we're both doing talent attraction work, but there's a carve out that's specifically for visitation. And when, you know, I have peers who are in tourism and hospitality communities, I know I'm not Bar Harbor. I grew up in the Bar Harbor region. I can understand all of the differences between us, and I don't think what would work for them would work for us in so many ways. But as we're thinking about who do we target and what are we marketing about this region for visitors? You know, I'm not trying to get someone to plan their week's main vacation here. That's not realistic. And we want to be successful at attracting people here and retaining them for even just 24 hours. 36 would be great, but do stay, eat a couple meals, take in a show at one of the spots. And the reality is all of those pieces, though I am in love with the food options, dining options, theater options, and music options here, are options that are repeated in other coastal communities that have other pieces. And so to have something here that is cultural, that somebody would plan a trip around, that does have that additional impact to our local economy, local businesses, but that is unique,
right,
and differentiates us, I really think it's going to be a game changer for our local economy and for the businesses that stand to benefit from that. Because, you know, if I say, and this is literally what we're targeting, but, you know, we can, it's terrifying, all of the data points that you can
sure.
target with people.
Yeah.
Super great also, but interesting. But if I can literally say, we're looking for people who read this type of magazine, who are interested in these type of activities, and who have recently searched a trip to Bar Harbor, we can target those people and say, on your trip,
on your way
to and back right. from Bar right. Harbor, spend a day with us.
Right.
And I think it's a really important message. And I think the new Main Meal Museum will be just a really important tool in the toolkit for those like us who are tending to the whole picture. Like I don't have one customer. I don't have one business that I'm marketing. I'm really trying to promote this region, the municipalities within it, and all of the outdoor recreation and cultural destinations and things to do while you're here. And to be able to have something of that caliber that is unique to this region will be such a benefit to all of us for our economic means, not just that, right? And so, yeah I really can't wait.
But
hurry
I'm
up.
I'm trying.
Construction happens so quickly. Let's cut that ribbon.
Hopefully Langford and Lowe and Platts are listening. Are you listening?
there is so much construction right now that I've had this conversation a bit recently. I think it's part of the new year, the turning of the calendar, but you know, how are we doing? What's the trajectory of this community? And there's just been so many public announcements of businesses that are closing. And if you're connected to those businesses, like I am, those are hard to hear, but there is still so much positive that is happening here. And there is so much brightness on the horizon that I keep kind of orienting myself to. And I think Main Mill's a big piece of that bright light.
Thanks. It's coming, but it's going to take
quicker.
Time. I know. I wish I could say it was my 2025 goal, but it's my 2026 goal.
No, we'd rather have it done right than done early. That's something my parents would tell me to say, I suppose. All right, you ready for your dessert course?
I'm so ready.
Okay.
Our dessert course is called Looking Back, Leading Forward, where we invite our guests to share advice or insights they would give to their younger self or to those with big ambitions in business or community leadership.
So for you, Rachel,
mm-hmm.
I thought about this, and I...
You could just answer it for me, Shannon.
No. Okay. I thought about the question.
Oh, okay.
We go back and forth between kind of advice that you'd give retrospectively versus forward, and I just, I think you embrace forward thinking so much that I'm leaning in that direction. So what is one lesson or piece of wisdom that you would share with someone aiming to make an impact? Yeah, I know.
That is a big question.
It's a big question. But in everything that you have done, since the minute you started in this role, you've known you were charged by your board. You took it seriously. It's what excited you and made you want the job. You've been focused on impact. You're somebody
yeah.
who gets impact and where it comes from and what it takes and sometimes the sacrifices. And so I want to hear your bit of wisdom that if somebody...
I would say I think lean into something that is doable, implementable. I think that's always been my thing here, was this felt like just big enough that I could do it and do it well. And it wasn't pie in the sky. It's not some huge overarching plan where it's every single cultural institution. It's the all culture in Lewiston, Auburn. It's not that. I couldn't do that. We can create a plan for that.
Yeah.
It's not wildly implementable. It's nice to talk about and interesting from an intellectual point of view. I think that's what's excited me about this job. It's what's excited me about past jobs. And it's mm-hmm. what excites me about the future of this is it's a vision that could actually get done.
Yeah.
So Find
this is why you're on the show. Clearly, I'm drawn to people who are action-oriented.
Yeah. Find something that can actually get done that excites you and do that.
I love that.
How's that?
No, it's, I mean, it's fantastic advice. It's interesting because I don't, it's advice that needs to be said and heard, right? Because I think there are, I've spent a lot of time mentoring, advising, getting paid to advise and provide strategy for folks. And it is far, far too rare that someone says, but is it achievable? And I love a stretch goal, right? Like I don't like dumbing things down. I think that people should push themselves. I think they should push others to something outside of their comfort zone. But I think whether it is achievable, particularly if you are somebody of whom you're hoping that your legacy or what you leave behind is like there's an impact, it doesn't matter that you spend a lifetime doing it if you were never able to get it done. Not because you didn't try, not because you didn't, but if you weren't able to get it done, it's actually not going to leave an impact. And I think that is, it's not a lens that enough people apply to kind of the big life thought decision points that they have. I was engaged in this collaborative focused on health in the area. And we were part of a cohort of many other communities in the state that were doing it, but this was here in Lewiston and Auburn. This work has grown up in ways that I'm super proud of and has been super impactful, called Healthy Neighborhoods. It ultimately led to the Choice Transformation Plan and the Tree Street Neighborhoods Initiative. But in its infancy, we were trying to figure out what's the biggest health issue facing our community. And there were a lot of like really well-documented, interrelated, complex health stuff. I mean, everything from chronic diseases to lead poisoning, all kinds of stuff. And there came a point in our community engagement process where, you know, the collaborative was tasked with being like, okay, so what's the one thing that we're gonna do that we can move the needle on? And we spent some time really saying, for example, universal health coverage would be the biggest, most impactful thing to the health of our overall community. If we could get people covered, then like you're going to solve a lot of problems that way, a whole bunch of the other things on our list. And we knew there was no way a really committed, wonderful, lovely collaborative of people here could change state or federal policy in our lifetimes alone with the resources we had.
Right.
And we really did say, like, where could we actually have impact? Where is there? And I think so many times people ask the question, where is nothing being done that we could do the thing? And I would say, like, where can what you do contribute to something else so that the thing gets done?
Right.
Because that's impactful. And so I also love, like, that that's your advice because it's spot on.
And like that makes you happy. Like this thing excites me and it makes me happy. Like it is taking care of people. It's gonna take care of people. I don't know how many people. I hope lots of people.
Yeah.
It's taking care of me while I'm doing it. And it's gonna take care of some number of people once we're open. And so like I'm super committed to it for that reason. And like it was a thing I could get done.
Yeah. I love that. And you've gotten it done.
All right, don't say that.
Okay.
We're not open
yet. Your ground
yet.
Is broken. I feel like we're committed.
We are committed.
Was that jinxy level?
We still have
jinx-y?
A lot of money to raise. We've raised a whole lot of money. We still have more money to raise.
If people wanted to support you, where would they find out more information?
They could go right onto our website and donate to us. We don't have that much information yet about the Capital campaign on there, but it will be on there soon.
In the next two or three months.
Mainmill.org.
There we go. Thank you for your time today. Thanks for all that you're doing.
Thanks for having
me. Yeah, I'm excited to see your impact.
We could keep going for
tell people, like, how are we going to fill our time? I promise. It's hard to stop. You are relatively young.
I am.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
I'm 36.
Yeah, compared to my 44, right? Like, you're a baby.
I'll be 37 next month.
I mean, you're experienced and skilled, so I don't mean to reduce you in any way by your young age. But the reality is when we're talking about impact, I think you will have had impact from this project before you're my age. And so when you become my age,
please,
that I am today,
goodness, let it be done before 9.
Well, so then, like, then what's the next stage of impact? So we'll have you back for another episode where we'll talk about the next stage of your life, whether it's for the mill or just for the type of impact that you want to have at that point. But you're going to have impact before you are the ripe old age of 44, which I sit at. So, Mark, did you want to weigh in on the age conversation?
Should I?
He has a baby face, but don't let it fool you. He's got me. He's got, he's at least my age.
The end.
Cut.
No comment. Can I ask a question?
Yeah, yeah, please do.
I was curious if you missed New York City.
I miss it every day for myself and not at all for my children. We moved here to raise our kids here very intentionally, and I have never regretted that choice for a single second, and I say that with not a single family member in the state of Maine. So it's not without its challenges, as everybody who's raised young children knows.
Yeah.
So I miss it a lot for me, but my parents both live there. My brother still lives there. So we visit a lot, and I'm glad for my children to have, to be comfortable in New York the way I am and the way that I don't think you can be unless you're from there or you have people that are from there. And I think this is the absolute best place to be raising children. I really think all of sort of the social media ills and all the things that like young people are facing that I'm nowhere near with a 6 and a 4-year-old yet, I do believe probably time and more research is going to tell us that like the best combatant against those things is the outdoors and yeah. space and freedom that honestly you can't have in New York City.
Yeah.
It's not possible. The things my kids do at our house in Maine just safety-wise wouldn't be possible. They can't go outside and be outside for 3 hours by themselves at the age of 6 and 4. That's
yeah.
not a thing
yeah,
in New
yeah.
York City. I think it's really important. So
yeah.
So I mean what I say. So yeah, I miss it every day for myself.
Gotcha. Was there a particular object from the October 25th collection that had a significant impact on you?
That's like asking somebody to choose their favorite child, mm-hmm. which I actually believe on any given day everybody has an answer to. They're just not going to say it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I actually will choose an object, despite the fact that I shouldn't. So there are miniature sculptures that are in the form of I love you, the American Sign Language symbol for I love you. They're about 2 inches tall. They're white. They're clearly handmade. They were left by two deaf artists who live in Massachusetts who made them and drove them up here and left them on the crosses of the four deaf victims. And we found them a few weeks after the shooting. I had actually been saying for a few days as we'd been collecting things, I really wish somebody would make an I love you sculpture and leave it at the site that, you know, the ASL sign for I love you. It was such an impactful moment
yeah.
for me personally, and I think for the community as a whole at the vigil.
Yeah.
And it has stuck with me then very intensely and since then. And so now we have, and then somebody made them. It was amazing. And
yeah.
so
yeah.
I am obsessed with these little I love you statues.
I was hoping that was because her and I have talked about this before, and I never asked her that question because I was afraid she wouldn't answer it. So kudos to you for your bravery in answering that tough question. But she's talked about these statues a bunch, and then I got the opportunity to see them in person, and you do kind of just fall in love with them. And yeah. for me, yeah, the I love you moment, we had a deaf speaker who in the middle of the vigil just, I mean, it was clearly immediately very meaningful and conveying something beyond what it meant to us hearing folks, to the deaf community in the room. And as an organizer, I think the vigil was like the first moment I allowed myself to turn off and just be a human since the minute it happened. And so like once it started, all of my role was done. And so I like took a seat 13 pews back and just engaged in that vigil like somebody who needed the healing, which is what we intended it for. And so I just stopped being all the other things, and I was just Shanna, like a person in this community that hurt like everyone else. And so that moment inside was super powerful. It wasn't until I got a text message from a colleague outside that showed me like 3,000 people with the same hand symbol up, and it just felt like such a moment that unified us inside to the people outside, to the people at home. And so when you told me the first time about those sculptures, it immediately had that feeling for me too. And I don't know if adorable feels the wrong word, but they're adorable. They're beautiful little,
they're very
heartfelt.
Sweet.
Yeah.
They're very sweet and impactful.
Yeah.
And they capture the essence of one of the flavors of what happened
yeah.
here, right?
Yeah.
I mean, each of these horrible things that happens in communities, they're the same, and yet they're different. They each have a different flavor, for lack of a better word, and this is ours. And it sort of, to me, captures Lewiston's essence in some way.
Yeah. I love that that's your favorite.
Yeah. Thank you. Just one more. And this one's
These are
easy.
Good. Why didn't you interject along the way?
That's what I'm saying. Thank you, Rachel, for that positive feedback.
You're welcome. Yeah, these are good questions. Okay.
I love that when he has the questions.
There are actually bad questions in the world. These aren't them.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, he never has a bad question.
I just learned something about Rachel about an hour ago that I'd like to bring to our listeners' attention.
Is that
I love this area. I love living here most of the time, 7 months out of the year.
Oh, yeah.
Some mornings I wake up like this morning when it's 6 below 0.
And your bike.
And I ask myself, why do I live here? You're not like that. You love the cold.
I love the cold.
Why? What is it about the cold?
You can always make yourself warmer.
Can you?
Yeah, put on more layers.
I'm with her.
I learned that this morning when I was out trying to thaw my pipes.
So see, I don't do home maintenance.
And that is why you love the cold.
So see, I did grow up in New York City.
Right. You're not crawling around messing with pipes, huh?
So one of the things, it's sort of an unspoken rule in my marriage, is like, I don't do
that stuff.
That stuff. Yep. That goes right onto the husband list. Yeah. So that's the type of thing I wouldn't... Things that don't happen to people that live in apartments don't fall in my bucket.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And whoever is listening to this, we are in a stretch right now where we have had temperatures below zero for like a week. We're going into a week.
I was trying to commit. So we have a remote employee who's fully remote and lives in Florida. And the panhandle is getting like 6 inches
snow.
Of snow, which is bananas. So we've been sending barbs to each other about cold weather. And like she doesn't get the right to complain.
My favorite thing about all of these southern states that are getting snow is the states that just shut down because they don't have snow plows.
They don't.
We've just shut down all the streets. We have no. We'll just wait for it to melt. Like, good luck, guys.
In her town, they don't have salt. So they literally are sending trucks to the beach to get sand. In Florida, they're like, let's go get some sand from, you know, the ocean to put on our. Anyway, it does. It cracks me up. But I love good cold weather. I love that. You keep enjoying the cold weather.
Thanks, Shannon.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for being here. I truly appreciate it.
Thanks for having
it.
Me.
Yeah.
This was fun.
We're going to keep looking at Rachel's stories over the...
Yeah.
But she'll be a story that we want to keep up with. A person with the stories that we want to keep up with.
I'll come back right before we have a shiny new building that's open.
I can't wait.
Yeah.
Can't wait. It's one of my beacons of hope through tough times. Mm. To all of you listeners, you know, like us, subscribe, share so you can keep hearing stories. Throw us a comment and tell me some of the stories that you'd like to hear. If there's somebody or a story or perspective that you'd like to see, we're always open to that. Talk to you soon.